Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Hey, Club Scouts, it's your host, Michael, and your super producer,
Riley. Hi.
Hi, everybody. We just wanted to come in up top of this episode. Originally, we had a brand new episode planned, but as life sometimes happens, I had to fly back to my hometown of Kansas City for a family emergency, and it threw our schedule into a loop. So we have instead a very fun Patreon unlock from BCC The Other Side. This is our chat with our favorite, two of our favorite guests of all time, Greg and Dana Newkirk, talking about their latest film, The Unbinding, which, Riley, we highly recommend our Club Scouts check out, yes?
Absolutely. I think it's their best work yet. And Greg and Dana are just legends in their field.
They really are. This is sort of the part two of the episode we had with them back in September. So if you haven't seen The Unbinding, it's okay. You can listen to this without watching it. If you want to hit pause and go watch that, come back. That's great, too. Either way, I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. And Greg and Dana, do not hold back. They have some really cool revelations about the movie and the supernatural in general in this conversation. Also, we have some exciting stuff happening in the clubhouse this week. Riley, why don't you let everyone know what's going on?
Well, we've slowly been trickling it out, but it is now, we soft launching, but now we are full hard launching the BCC YouTube. We're going to be going back through the entire catalog and posting every episode from episode zero, paired with a beautiful animatic that is just gives you a nice little backdrop while you're listening to your boys.
We had a friend of the show and fellow Club Scout, Derek Cole, illustrate 3 awesome stills that have been animated to accompany all of your episodes. So it's sort of like the BCC's version take on like Lo-Fi Cafe or Lo-Fi Girl. We're very excited about it. We could not be happier with the way things have turned out over there. There's also other videos that we've unlocked from the Patreon over there. There's stuff that we've just thrown up from our live streams over there. And we're also including a new playlist of listener videos, eyewitness videos that people have sent in to us that have accompanied past L-Files episodes. So there's a lot of content happening over on YouTube right now. And it really is starting to feel like a new wing of the clubhouse is being built.
Exactly.
I almost said erected, but I thought it might be a little too dirty.
It's not just another way to get the show. It's a whole new experience of the show. And it's including you guys, too. So keep sending us your eyewitness videos.
That's right. Yes, please do. BigfootCollectorsClub@gmail.com. Even if they don't accompany an L-Files, we can put them up there. Just give us a little description of what you're witnessing and capturing in that video. We want those videos. It's a really cool way to compile your guys' footage into one cool spot. So there you go. Check out our YouTube channel over at youtube.com/BigfootCollectorsClub. And check out this episode of The Other Side with Greg and Dana Newkirk. You can hear more episodes like this one over at patreon.com/BigfootCollectorsClub.
Welcome to Bigfoot Movie Club.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to BCC, The Other Side, the parallel dimension to Bigfoot Collectors Club. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your alternate host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our ultra-terrestrial producer,
Riley Bray.
And welcome, Club Scouts, to a very
special installment of Bigfoot Movie Club. It's not often that we have the filmmakers of the movie with us in the clubhouse. We are joined tonight by the stars of the very new and very spooky documentary, The Unbinding. You heard them on Wednesday's episode. Please welcome back Dana and Greg Newkirk. The Newkirks, welcome to the other side.
Hello.
So stoked to be here again. Oh, thanks,
thank you
guys.
For joining us over here. Yes.
Double feature. A blast going through the Elf files, but now we really get to dig into your files, and we get to really figure out what's been going on with you guys surrounding this artifact and everything that happened in the movie. I want to jump in, but I think we should do a couple things. One, why don't we have you guys tell us what the movie... We could do one of two things. I have a synopsis that I pulled that I thought Bryce could read in a sort of movie guy voice.
And then
we could then just play the trailer to tease people about it, and then we could jump into a... you guys are probably sick of describing the movie yourselves, so maybe that's a way to do it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
We could do it whatever you guys need. Right,
we're good.
All right, well, let's hear the synopsis of The Unbinding, and then if you have anything you guys want to add to it before we play the trailer, let us know.
Great, here we go.
After finding a strange statue in the Catskills, hikers become the target of chilling paranormal phenomena. As the activity escalates, occult researchers Greg and Dana Newkirk are called to uncover the truth behind the haunted artifact.
Love it.
That cues you right up.
We're just going to hire you for that from now on.
It's like you're a professional or something.
Yeah, so there you go. That's basically the premise for the movie, although there's much more to the movie than that.
Yeah, so much more.
Very simple, couple lines, but
perfect.
Does the job.
Yep. So let's do this. Listener, if you have not yet seen the film, I suggest that you listen to this trailer and then you go watch. Where can people find it again? Remind everybody. It's on everything, right?
Amazon Prime, Apple TV,
YouTube,
Google Play.
Okay.
In your computer.
Exactly. However you're listening to this, you can probably watch it. So, Riley, why don't we roll the trailer? And then when we come back, we are in full spoiler country, everybody. We're just going to get into it. All right?
Watch this movie before you come back. Seriously, do yourself a favor.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's great.
All right, here we go.
Back in January of 2016, there was a post to the paranormal subreddit by a user who used a throwaway account to tell the story of how he and one of his friends found a strange effigy in the forest in the Catskill Mountains. They did what you're never supposed to do, and they took the effigy home with them.
A majority of the objects in the museum have been donated, and a lot of them come to us from clients or people that we've worked with, or people who really want to stay anonymous and they just have something that they want to get rid of, and they feel as if there's something attached to them that they're frightened of.
9 times out of 10, the things that people send us don't ever do anything strange for us. But that last 10% is where things get really interesting. And occasionally, there's 1% that changes the way that we think about haunted objects. This turned into a way bigger ordeal than we'd ever anticipated.
I felt like a small kid who was absolutely terrified.
It seemed that the larger picture was coming into view. I mean, we basically promised the Chrome that we were going to take it back. I looked at Dana and I said, we can never do this again. We need to do something about this.
Shut it.
Never did I ever have anything happen like it did with the Chrome.
I felt like I was literally looking at a living nightmare.
We failed.
You have no control over her. And you have no control over us.
Then it became maximum chaos.
Oh my God.
We bind it to the nails and we release it.
All right, you've been warned. We're getting into it. So it turns out that the idol was just a lonely spirit that's very, very evil. No, it's
be careful. Yeah. We spent 5 years making friends with her.
Michael, don't ruin this now.
Yeah, no.
Don't come calling me in the middle of the night and telling me wet footprints are going through your house.
This is the third rule in our book.
Yeah, right. I forgot we're making rules. I'm breaking the rules.
Don't offend the spirit.
Yeah. Well, let's get the obvious and annoying question out of the way right up top, because I'm sure people are wondering it. I know you've been asked it before. Mm-hmm. Why not Hellier 3?
Well, fun fact, if people watch the dates in this film, they'll see that this actually all took place during Hellier 2.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There are some scenes in the movie, in fact, that you'll notice we're wearing the same things as we were in scenes in Hellier 2, because
we were doing
the same thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. So this all happened while we were doing Hellier 2. This was supposed to be out way earlier than it came out. Mm-hmm. But we are working on Hellier 3.
We are.
I can tell you.
Wow. Okay. Oh,
we're
wow.
doing it right now.
Yeah, we've been shooting.
Wait, right now? Is this going to be in Hellier 3?
This is part of it.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Wait and see what happens.
Let's see what kind of synchronicities you guys can generate during this conversation.
Great. Okay, cool.
And
cool.
We'll get it in.
Cool. Great. Just hold off long enough to send you guys some BCC merch maybe you can wear during the movie.
Perfect. Absolutely.
That would be great. Who's to say we're not going to already?
That's true, actually.
Speaking of wardrobe, I did notice that sweet Twin Temple t-shirt you were rocking.
Oh, yeah.
Binding.
We very intentionally, I wore a bunch of witchcraft-related shirts throughout.
Wow, that's
very
so
fitting. Yes. All very on brand.
So where to begin with this movie? Let's kind of start at the top, I guess. You know, my question watching it is, when you see a post like the ones that the campers put on Reddit, right? I believe it was Reddit where you saw it.
Yeah.
Or even when the artifact arrived at your house, how do you know you're not, or do you, how do you know you're not being set up here? That this isn't some sort of like LARP version of creepypasta? Because how do you know?
I mean, it's an excellent question. Mm-hmm. And the answer is we don't. I think, you know, we get pretty good at picking that stuff out, but there's a reason why we spend so much time at the beginning of this documentary talking about how most of the stuff that we receive never does anything strange for us. And I think there's reasons for that. I know that there's people trying to pull our leg all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it happens all the time. But this one had so much weird stuff happen to it that... Despite, like, here's the thing, full disclosure, I totally am ready for somebody to come out at some point after this movie is out, because we're recording this before it's out, and be like, hey, you found my art project, congratulations, or whatever,
right.
You know,
right.
or gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But if you watch the movie, there's so much weird stuff that happens around it that I think that it even paints an even stranger picture of how the phenomena may work, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Even in Hellier, David Christie's not a real guy. He doesn't exist there. He's not a real person. The stuff that we experience after that is very real.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I can never know whether or not somebody's pulling our leg until they admit to it, if they ever admit to it. But I think that the phenomena that happens through these stories and because of these stories is the part that's really compelling to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And it's not like, okay, if this wasn't some binding of an old god by someone living in a cult in the Catskills, you know what I mean? If it's not... But you still get results, you know, there's still activity, then it's sort of like, I guess, when we were talking about earlier this week with the L-file, where somebody wrote in about their fifth grade experience where someone drew a picture and then they ended up seeing the entity and then they see it a little.
Absolutely.
Like, I think what where I'm going with this, and what I think you guys are doing as filmmakers, is it really is it helps us reframe, and especially The Unbinding helps us reframe how we think about and interact with these paranormal experiences. Because I do seem to think that there is something about this phenomenon that's like, okay, if you want to see a Bigfoot, you'll see a Bigfoot. If you want to see a ghost, you'll see a ghost. Or, you know what I mean? But it may not play by the rules.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
It may play by the rules that you're inventing as you go along with your investigation. You know what I mean? And then what does that mean?
I was just going to say, I was totally going to agree with you. I think more often than not, you see what we've seen over the years is people, like when they're ghost hunting, for instance, if you have someone come into a location and they're ready to have an aggressive experience, often they'll have an aggressive experience. It's like so much of it is what you're bringing to the process. So you see it when you know what you're looking for, you can really see it happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird stuff. And I don't know. This movie was great for me just because I do feel like the narrative flipped. And obviously the thing that's going to be in every Jason Blumhouse, you know, produced movie where the idol is evil and whatever's in it is evil and it's a demon and Ed and Lorraine Warren have to cast it out. I like that you do achieve a level of sympathy for whatever this entity is, as obviously you guys did too. When in this journey, because again, this is, you know, we're watching an hour and a half, but this is 5 years for you guys. When in this journey did you start to go, maybe what's here is not something bad? Maybe this is more of a friend than a foe.
I mean, that was a gradual thing for sure. And in, you know, I've said this a couple times to people who've asked about this. I have a hard time watching the first half of the documentary now because my beliefs about this stuff have changed so much. This whole thing was, ironically, I wanted to call it a come to Jesus moment, but it's not quite that. It's more a come to Mokosh moment. Yeah. Where I'm starting to realize that there are a few different ways that we can look at what we're doing. We are engaging with a hoax that is manifesting phenomena around us. We are engaging with somebody's attempt to bind something that they thought was evil, some form of witchcraft, or we are dealing with something, some weird other thing that is co-creating a story with us as we react to what we're hearing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that scares me the most, because I start to believe that that's what a lot of paranormal phenomena is.
That's a much better way of getting at what I think I was trying to say earlier, which is it's sort of like you and the phenomenon are creating the narrative at the same time, depending on what it's like improv, right?
Yeah.
It's an improv. It's an improv.
Sure.
You guys are yes-anding one another, whether this thing starts as a fake prop or it begins as the real artifact, you know? And that's what I'm saying. I feel like this is what this movie's making me think about.
Ectoplasm and...
Exactly. And I think that's what when we started to realize what could have been happening, and again, any three of those things are equally fascinating, but that weird third idea won't leave my head the more that we deal with this, and the more I think about things that we've gone through, that other people we know have gone through, that we see in some of the biggest paranormal stories in history.
Yeah.
There appears to be like a call and response, and what I have seen a lot of, and part of the reason why we approached this movie the way we did, is I don't think a lot of people are following it to a good end. And so for us, we thought, okay, if this is beginning to manifest, you know, let's figure out a way to bring this to its natural end in a way that feels good to everybody.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, hey, the universe goes, guess what? This is a carving of Mokosh, a weird Ukrainian goddess that we've never heard of before. Yeah. Most people I don't think have ever heard of. And then, hey, guess what? One of the biggest experts in Slavic paganism lives right down the road from us here in Kentucky, you know? And then we go there And we see, you know, all of the Ukrainian stuff. One of the things that's not in the doc, that mountain that the crone came from has the largest Ukrainian cultural center in the country on the other side of that mountain.
Right.
Okay. Wow. So we know where it came from, or we can guess or assume where it came from then.
Yeah, I mean, there's a town named Ellenville in the Catskills, the southern end of the Catskills. And part of what shocked us is when we got there, we saw all of the Ukrainian stuff, and it took us a while to put two and two together. And when we came back, there's like that weird meta moment at the end of the documentary where, much to Carl Pfeiffer, our cinematographer, director, editor, one-man band, he, much to his dismay, is all iPhone footage because we already put the nice cinema cameras away.
Oh, my God.
Is us finding out right then and there, as we thought we were wrapping up the last shoot for this doc, a recreation scene, we're still in our recreation clothes. We find out, oh, well, there's this other thing too called the Kikimora, which sort of accompanies Mokash in a lot of these stories, is an old woman, scraggly old woman, leaves wet footprints, really
so
tall,
great.
Like mm-hmm. spooky stuff like that.
The
steals
wet
children.
Footprints, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Steals kids.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can see why when we started to realize, like, okay, if this is a call and response, if we're playing catch with the phenomena, let's finish this out in a positive way.
Yeah.
And then maybe people who watch this will start to have that same kind of experience when they are engaging with the phenomena, where they're careful what they feed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and you guys were so careful, and I'm sure, Dana, this is probably where a lot of your expertise mm-hmm. comes in. I mean, because this very witchy object, but then you have sort of this ability to sort of look beyond that. And, you know, Mitch Horowitz used
with it.
Yeah, empathize mm-hmm. with it. Mitch Horowitz used to have this idea that the old gods have been like dying for us to recognize them and come
sure.
back into our lives a little bit. And there's energy yeah. there. Do you think that, and I think, you know, I love how you sort of eloquently summed up how you can get involved in sort of like this thing becomes ritualistic in a sense. And it's mm-hmm. almost like the sum of your guys' magic practice makes this thing. I'm getting off a tangent here, but I guess my question was, is how does being a witch sort of influence your approach to use Michael's term, reframe this haunted witchy artifact?
I think one of the things that started happening, and it was unfolding throughout this investigation, was this recognition, I think that all of us were really coming to in a lot of ways, that our jobs as paranormal investigators or people who are retelling these stories of high strangeness or of people's personal paranormal experiences, that's a sacred role. It really truly is a sacred role. And at certain points in many of our ancestors, it would have been a sacred role. The people who would have retold these stories would have been responsible for them, and they would have recognized the responsibility that they have. But that's the thing.
Took us a while.
It did. It really did. And so I think one of the things that really started to unfold in all of our minds was this recognition of the responsibility that we had. And I think that being a witch and being someone who is pagan and is really close to many, really close to many kind of magical stories, I think that I began to recognize the responsibility of telling a story like this and what we needed to, where we needed to be to tell this story properly. And so I think that was one of the biggest, it was the most helpful thing. I mean, being an occultist and being a pagan, being someone who's a magic practitioner, it was my wheelhouse. And so I think I became a lot more confident as this investigation kind of unfolded and we kind of collectively as a group started to recognize the sacred role that we have as people who retell these stories and share these stories and create you know, documentaries or television shows around these stories. There's a weight to it. There's a responsibility, and we're upholding a sacred position, all of us. And
no,
so,
you get that. You feel that when you guys handle this with such class and the responsibility that it comes sort of moving this whole topic of the paranormal forward, I think.
Well,
and you guys take such an authentic and honest approach. It just comes out of every frame in the film.
I think, too, like, and this is obvious in the movie as well, so it's not like I'm coming up with this idea, but it really does make me think about how, and, you know, I grew up Presbyterian, Bryce grew up Lutheran, Greg, I know you grew up
Baptist,
and all of our horror and all of our paranormal stuff, at least here, I feel like in the decades that we're living in Western culture in the United States, it really is all funneled through this idea of good and evil based on Judeo-Christian thought systems, yeah. Right?
Right.
It really is. You know, in a way, it's, you know, you could call it like Christian privilege. You know what I mean? Where, like, it's sure. This idea of, like, there's the devil and there's angels and the angels are fighting the devil.
Yeah.
And look, it works in some stories and it's great, but really we've barely begun to reframe. And I don't want to use that term too much, but like we've barely begun to look at horror and look at the supernatural and the paranormal through different lenses and not through mm-hmm. that perspective. I mean, we talked about this recently on the show, with Ryan Sprague, or about this idea of that, you know, the stuff that's happening with the UAP phenomenon at the Pentagon, there are so many people in the U.S. military that are highly religious and practicing Christians, mm-hmm. and they don't want to look into this stuff because they think it's demonic.
Hey, demonic, mm-hmm. for sure. And I think that's a narrative
they
we're
might
going
be right.
to see more of.
We don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Totally.
But
I don't know.
I mean, you know, look. I'm just saying that when we stop and think about the way that stories are told, and especially horror is presented to us in the generation, it's so often the devil's behind it, and you need some right. sort of angelic or godly power to banish that.
Yeah.
And I like that this movie is starting to just flip that narrative and go, hey, we should look at this in a different yeah. way.
Yeah. Yeah. Nuance. We want more nuance.
And, you know, our thing, our message has been for a while now, you know, I say it in the doc. I don't want to be the guy who comes in and drives your monster from out of your bed. I don't want to do that. I want you to solve your own problems. And I can tell you what I use for my problems and yeah. how we go about this stuff. But the real point we're trying to make with not just The Unbinding, but with everything else is a lot. Because we, like, here's the thing, like you were just saying, I think that the paranormal genre is widely made and consumed by people who are part of that Judeo-Christian worldview. And that's just how it is. It's how it's been yeah. for, I think, Ed and Lorraine Warren were mm-hmm. really a big part of yeah. pushing that narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Laying that foundation for sure.
Totally. Big
but time. If we can break people back out of that for just a minute, and they can maybe start to go, okay, why am I scared of the monster in my closet? Why am I scared of the monster under my bed? Why don't I try talking to it?
Yeah, what can I learn about myself?
Because it's funny. Everybody we ask who's dealing with a paranormal problem, especially ghosts, we're like, well, have you tried talking to it? And they're like, no, of course not.
Right.
It's like, well,
right.
What do you do when someone's not listening to you? You raise your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's happening in a lot of those cases. But the point is not to scare people, but to make them be curious, because if they can become curious about the whatever's bumping in the night, mm-hmm. then your neighbor who has a different maybe gender identity than you or religious belief than you becomes way less scary mm-hmm. because right. stories are how we interpret the world. And for a long while now, we've been fed stories that are scary just for the sake of being scary.
Yeah.
And there are stories about things that really define people's spirituality, what they think about life after death, what yeah. other intelligence might be out there. It feels really counterintuitive to creating a really curious, open, and kind society.
Mm-hmm. So how do you remain curious in this and still be safe? Because also there are bad people out there, you know what I mean? And
sure.
there have to be malevolent entities out there. So how are you protecting yourself? How do you ask questions? You know, there's the old Bell Witch story of like, well, it grew in strength because they were knocking back and they were talking to it.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the rules that we thought we should operate by is don't talk to the ghost because it only gives them, you know, whatever, it only gives them power. So
I think that's a sound theory.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not so much about not talking to the ghosts, but more about what you're talking about with them.
Right.
So I think it's just changed the type of conversation that you're having with these entities. Because here's the thing. I think that if we had gone the stereotypical route with the crone, and we had, you know, because the stuff we were experiencing was straight out of that Reddit thread.
Yeah.
And if we had continued down that road, things might have gotten a lot scarier.
Yeah.
But changing the kind of conversation we were having changed the type of things we were experiencing.
It really, I mean, it sort of started, this theory started when someone gave us years ago something that, I mean, they called it a Dybbuk box. Mm-hmm. And we did a bunch of research, and we really, really spent a lot of time digging into what a Dybbuk box was. And we came to the conclusion, and I mean, at this point, it's pretty well known that Dybbuk boxes aren't a thing. They just don't exist. They were created by a horror author in the early 2000s. A Dybbuk is something that exists within Jewish mysticism, but Dybbuk boxes themselves are just sort of
totally
pop culture. Pop culture.
It's a MacGuffin.
Spoopy. Yes, it's a MacGuffin. Exactly.
I'm keeping a Dybbuk in the Dybbuk box.
Exactly. And so, but what was interesting is when this box was given to us, we did experience strange things around it. And so we started coming up with this idea that instead of treating it the way that you think that someone would treat it, let's change our perception of it. And that really, it's a very like Ghostbusters.
We did Ghostbusters too.
Like, are you sleeping with it, Ray? Like we definitely did went
but
that
it worked.
Route.
Yeah.
And so it was a matter of, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're so like fixated and obsessed with giving people empowerment, like leading people to empowerment places, because we do have these weird experiences and we do have scary experiences. And again, as we talked about in the movie, sometimes those experiences are scary because they need to be scary, and they help us grow and they help us change and evolve. But when we're empowered, we recognize that we can have control over the environment in which we're having the experience in. So it's a matter of reframing it. We are reshaping the way that we think.
There's a good approach to that, too, that I think, obviously I'm not an expert in, like, child psychology, but you know, like the idea of there is a belief system, you know, there's stuff to it where, like, if a kid is acting out at school or at home and they're told by their parents or their teacher that they're bad, the kid starts to think I'm a bad kid, and then they reinforce bad behavior because they're taught this is what I am, I'm a bad thing. So there's sense in nurturing these things in a way that's like, okay, we're going to stop treating you like a bad kid and instead start treating you like a kid who's hurt, misunderstood, lost, has experienced trauma, and is trying to communicate and work through those bad feelings. And how can we then help you out of this situation into, you know, borrowing from the Judeo-Christian thought system, send you towards the light. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
I mean, it's sort of, you know, that was kind of the angle that we really, we took with it. And we kind of forced ourselves and asked ourselves to change our perception. And I think inevitably what ended up happening is really we became more in tune with our humanity. And I think that was what kind of became a guiding light through many of it. And I think that angle of kind of connecting with your humanity in that sort of way is a good way to traverse a lot of these spaces.
Yeah.
If you guys that makes sense.
It does. You guys take such a thoughtful approach to the way that you guys sort of approach this phenomenon. You know, what you're talking about, like treating like an object like that, that has such a tainted and stained history, you know, and sort of, you know, thinking deeper on how it could have gotten that way. And it's straight out of the lucid dream literature too. Like, you know, to add to that sort of kid thing, when you're like, they say, like, if you're being haunted by a nightmare in your dreams, you know, a monster, a whatever it is, you know, if you can get lucid, the only way to sort of confront that is to confront it head on, look it right in its eyes and be like, why are you chasing me? What do you want? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you? It's to get to understand that monster. And you know, like you guys sort of help reveal that it can transcend ideas about, you know, evil and good and light and dark. And you know what I mean? When you start to peel back those layers of we all have darkness, you know what I mean? And underneath that darkness, there's light. And I think you guys do such a great way at helping us to see that, oh, dark objects aren't always just evil. You know, there's a story here, and I love that. I loved the movie, man.
Thanks. It seems like there was a big turning point in the, I think it was a hotel room when you guys did the 3D scanning. And right. Dana, it's the Estes method. Sorry, I can't pull it off the top of my head, but you're communicating with something while they're scanning. And that really seemed to be a big turning point, not just in the film for the story, but for you guys as well. Can you describe what was happening in that moment and maybe stuff, something that we didn't see from that session? Because it seems like you guys were in there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was the second time I had ever done the Estes method. And at this point, I mean, I've probably done it for thousands of hours.
We'd just seen Connor do it in Hellier like a couple weeks before this.
Yeah.
Wow. Right on the heels of that. That's amazing.
Okay.
It's weird because when you're the person who's doing it, you only get like one half of the conversation, and right. You're just sort of like you're kind of in this liminal, isolated space because it's kind of the point. But so it's as if you're just sort of listening to just one half, and you kind of are guessing at what's going on. So for me, it was strange. It was a really isolating experience. It was like I was doing it for like 3.5-4 hours.
Yeah, that's
a really
long
time. Really, really long time to just be listening to, like, you know, radio static and strange sounds. But it was deeply, it was really emotional. And I couldn't even really follow what was going on. I was really just trying to relay information as it was coming in. But I felt really emotional. And it was sort of really impactful. And I think you're absolutely right. I think we left that experience kind of having that humanity switch, like, flipped on a little bit more. We were like, maybe we need to change the way that we're.
Right, Carl Pfeiffer at the premiere said he cut a lot of crying out. I remember that.
Yeah, right.
That's a lot. Yeah,
there was a lot of crying on the cutting room floor. Yeah,
yeah. Talk about that. Yeah, sorry, Riley, go ahead.
Well, just the title, like the unbinding. Like, is that partially referring to like sort of like the unbinding of your own beliefs and like the
100%?
Wow, that's good.
And I mean, if people are, you know, we'll give some of the secrets away. If people look at the actual title, it's just a mirroring of The Conjuring. Because it really is. It's meant not just about the unbinding of the crone. It's meant about how we've unbound our own feelings about ghosts. But also, this movie is sort of story as ritual in a way, where we're hoping to unbind people's preconceived notions about what these things are from them through the act of watching this film.
Yeah.
And there's still horror taking place. Like the
oh my God. Yeah. Oh yes. No, whoever... I was, when I got home, I was legitimately scared. I was like, I shouldn't be thinking about that crone. I'm going to bring it here just by thinking
about
this.
Don't bring it home, Bryce. Don't bring it home.
Think about the horror of if you are the spirit inside this thing that has been bound against your will from some, I don't know, extremist of some measure. You know what I mean? That's a terrifying thought. And you know, it's...
We set out to make a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the idea. Because originally this was supposed to be a half-hour vignette that eventually turned into what our Haunted Objects podcast is, which was just supposed to tell, like, stories and themes attached to different items in the collection. But when we sat down to do this interview, Carl was like, this deserves a bigger telling. Like, we can't just put this on YouTube. This has to be something that we do in a bigger way. It's too good. And so when we sat down with him to figure out how we were going to tell the story, we wanted to make a horror movie very intentionally that would bring people into this experience who were expecting the stereotypical, like, Ed and Lorraine Warren story. Mm-hmm. But then, like, having it flipped on its head when they come back out, so that every time that they encounter that stereotypical Ed and Lorraine story, they can't look at it the same way again.
Yeah, at least they have new tools and potentially a new element that they can
ideas
look through.
And,
they have a new lexicon that they can utilize for those types of situations, because we just really haven't had them. Like we've been talking about tonight, there's been very few alternative viewpoints that are highlighted when it comes to paranormal high strangeness research, just paranormal research in general. So, and as someone who, I wasn't raised religious, I've been an occultist and a practicing witch for a long time, but I've also been really lucky to have lots of friends who are from different places in the world and have different religious backgrounds than I do. And they have different, being able to do that and recognize that we have lots of different viewpoints that we can utilize as researchers. And I think, I always tell people, I think every paranormal investigator should have somewhat of an understanding of the occult, because I really think that it will give you a brand new way of, even just an extra chapter that you can go through and use as investigators to observe what's happening when it comes to this strange phenomena. But it's a great thing. Yeah.
100%. You know what I also love about it too is it tells us a little bit of your guys' story and how you met.
True,
yeah, I did kind of. I was like, it did touch me there. What's it like going on this sort of paranormal adventure together, you guys? Sort of doing this for as long as you've been doing and making such new ground.
Dane and I ran rival ghost hunting websites as kids.
We
were mortal enemies. So
Canada versus the States.
Yep.
Oh, amazing.
And the truth of the matter is, I always had a crush on Dana. Like, I just was bad with women. I was bad with girls. Dana and her friends, when we made friends on the internet, and you guys were like, oh, there's these cute girls from Canada, and they're like a mirror image of us. They want to come down, and they want to come, like, ghost hunting with us at our places.
What?
We always joke about how that, we were, this is how bad we were with girls.
This is
such
a true
huge
story.
Nerds.
I've seen the early footage of you, Greg, and your crew running around. You're pretty rambunctious.
Just causing chaos everywhere.
Didn't know. Totally unscared of ghosts and monsters, but terrified of girls.
Yeah. Sure. Right.
Well, yeah. When they said they wanted to come down, we all of our grandparents died the same time.
Everybody's grandparents died that weekend.
They
quote-unquote
died.
Right, we were like, right. That's...
We were something in the food, the water, it just, you're not going to believe this.
There's been a massacre in my town.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, it was obvious to you guys. You guys were like, oh, what a bunch of dicks.
All right.
And then, and then they got a television show, and we were so butthurt about it that we were just like, we can't be friends with them. And part of it was Dana had a boyfriend. She was a few years older than I am, which when you're 16 is a much bigger deal. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to burn this bridge.
Yeah.
And that way she can't hurt me.
Oh my God. Now
we're married.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But it's been great because, you know, Dane and I, we really do complement each other really well. Our different backgrounds, we can...
I say we enable each other.
Well, maybe that's
true. The likelihood of what's
Find
actually
someone
going on here.
As
well,
crazy
it looks like
as
you guys
are
having fun, too, you know?
Yeah.
We are, yeah. That's always the goal. If we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong. Yeah.
I don't know who's the lid and who's the pot, but you guys found each other. You complete the set for sure. I want to before we say goodbye. There were a couple things from the quick questions from the movie that I wanted. Jumping back on the crying bit, I did love when Carl said that at the Q&A. That last ritual that you guys do did look very emotionally taxing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
What were some of those emotions that were coming up during that?
I mean, it was release, honestly, and compassion and sort of, you know, we had this thing that had scared us so much, had scared so many other people. People had had terrifying experiences with this thing, plenty of which got cut out of the film.
Right.
Like, people were claiming they were having car accidents after interacting with this. Their eyes would burn. Their throats would close up. Weird. Scary, scary stuff that we experienced. And by the time that we got up that mountain, it was such an arduous trek. We just did an interview with the Ellenville local newspaper.
Oh, boy.
And they could recognize the hike. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it's weird because it seems like it's on the wrong side of the mountain. The place we were going was on the other side of the mountain. This was the only way we could get to it. And she couldn't believe how far we hiked.
Miles out of the way.
Hell yeah.
So we were exhausted mentally, emotionally, spiritually, I would argue. And so when those nails came out and that noose came off and there was that like weird static pop in the air, and then we look down and this thing is just a piece of wood.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that either, you know, we had attached to it, other people had attached to it, was attached to it naturally because something wanted its story told, whatever was in that thing was gone at that point. And it was such a sense of release that we all just started sobbing.
Yeah.
Because it felt like a big, big thing had been accomplished.
And you've been carrying it with you for a long time, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, years. This is like a years-long process.
Yeah.
I think in the documentary, Tyler, I think, describes it the best. And he says, holding the crone and being around the crone felt like being around a live grenade. And that's like that feeling, that apprehension, like kind of. And after a while, it became, you know, we were hyper aware of it at all times. And I think in that moment, in that instance, when that part of the ritual was complete, it felt like we were at a funeral. Like it really, everything changed. It became somber. Everyone was quiet. There was a lot of reflection happening, and it felt you could feel it. You could feel that sort of reverence that you feel in those kinds of instances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it as an audience member watching it too. It was such a great moment.
Done.
It's so great to see Tyler in there doing his master technician work, man. It's like you have some really great characters in this film. I love the new addition of the guy who crafts the 3D imaging. What was his name?
Jason.
He's the guy who did the alien abduction experiment
too. He's the one who did the recreation of the alien abduction, which terrifies me.
Yeah. We keep joking about how he's the Phil Coulson of the planet universe, where he's just tying it all together. Yeah.
You guys got a great crew over there.
We're very fortunate to have really talented,
incredibly talented.
Between like Carl, who's just, I mean, his eyes incredible. He makes stuff that punches well above our weight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. You
know, people like Tyler is a great artist who could help us do this insane thing that, like, when I asked him, I'm like, Tyler, can we do this? He's like, oh, no.
It's not possible.
No special effects guy would ever do this. You have to have a heated shed. And he's like, well, fuck it. Let's do it anyway.
So what's happened since? Any updates? Like, have you ever had FaceTime with the hikers who found it? Are they aware of this movie? You know, like, I'd be interested to see if it comes back to them in any way. Or how are things with any activity with the recreation of the Mokash statue? Anything?
First off, no contact with the hikers. Mm-hmm. I tried so many times, and it was a throwaway account. So who knows? It's probably just not been used. I tried so many times to get in contact. I'm hoping that when the movie comes out
yes,
they will see it, and maybe we'll get a little more context about this thing. Or maybe the person who made it will reach out. Mm. Yeah. You know, the other weird thing about this, this is something we didn't mention. When we were hiking up that mountain, we met two women who were coming down from the hiking path, and they asked us what we were doing, and we were very honest with them.
Oh, no. Well, I'm glad you asked. What we're actually doing is an unbinding.
It was exactly like that.
Literally.
And they're like, what are you, nuts? Like, you know, there's, because we went well beyond the path.
Right.
They told us an interesting piece of information, which is that the creator of the Blair Witch Project lives down the road.
No way. Oh my God.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
With that weird kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the Catskills are weird. I mean, lots of weird activity happening there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, that I think there's definitely a possibility there could be a sequel to this, because we don't have all the answers.
Yeah. There was, I mean, there's bits and pieces from that long Estes Method session that we did that has sort of never been answered. So even then, like, if we could get answers on that, that would be amazing.
A nerd,
any further
of
movement on Bidum?
Yes,
exactly.
That's exactly what we're hoping for.
Riley had a theory about Bidum.
I want to hear it.
It's an anagram of unbind. If the sort of the M is two N's.
Get the fuck out of here! Are you serious?
Oh my God.
If you look at the title. Riley was looking at the poster and he goes, huh.
I was like looking, I was like, Bidum, BIDUM. Like, if the M is two N's, then it's unbind. And I was like, oh, it's like calling out, like pleading, like plead, like unbind, 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 bidum, bidum, bidum.
Oh my God, it's like a Hodor scenario.
Yeah. It's Hodor. Exactly.
It's a Hodor.
Chills. Oh my God. Yeah. That's incredible.
The best thing that we've got, I mean, until now, that's pretty wild, Riley. The best thing we'd heard so far, one of the screenings, somebody was able to find out that Bidum is an old English like nickname for William.
Mm.
Oh,
but
I
it's
love
old.
That.
It's
So who knows? But man, you just creeped me out, dude.
Did you
and then
guys...
like
spirit calling out.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, did you ever think about recreating or inserting the, you know how the water, the thing that the carry that the Mokash statue was missing a piece. That was the water carrier,
the vessel.
Right? The vessel. Did you ever consider like plugging that into, you know, I was like, maybe they'll plug a vessel into there and see if something
You know, that's a
happens.
Great idea. We've not tried that, but what we're going to do kind of in that same vein is the only pieces that we have left are the nails and the noose, the original, like they just felt like the sources of the negativity. Mm-hmm. We want to put them in a, like a clear acrylic of the crone as to say that she is holding them.
Yeah, right. That's great.
Instead of vice versa. Mm-hmm. Right. So that you can still see those original pieces when we have it on display, but it's inside her like ghostly form.
Yeah, I like
that's
that.
That's cool.
I agree. Yeah. That noose looked pretty new to me. I feel like I feel like this thing was freshly bound before.
Yes.
It was
freshly bound.
The only place we talk about it in the doc, we went to so many, like we went to like Lowe's, we went to you know the what do they call that? The Hoover Do It Center or whatever it's called? I don't know. All the different little hardware stores to try and find the exact nails and the exact noose. And we couldn't find them anywhere. And it was by luck. We went to Walmart just to see. And they were both the same.
That's incredible. So, I love that.
The only big store at the base of that mountain is a Walmart.
It makes it creepier that it's a Walmart.
It does. It
you know
does.
What I mean?
Adds
that's
a
like
a Walmart store. Yeah. I like that level. For
it gives
sure.
you that like Absolutely. Serial killer really. Going out to buy duct tape feeling.
No, you know what it is, Michael? It's like, oh, this is really happening because people people shop for that type of shit at Walmart. You're like, oh, this is real.
It's real.
Like, yeah, it's shit real. Just got real.
The other question you asked was if we'd experienced anything strange afterwards. The weird thing was there hasn't been any, there's little kind of like hints here and there, but the craziest stuff was happening while we were shooting the recreations.
Yeah.
While we were shooting the recreations, everyone was getting drops of water like, on their head and down their neck to the point where
out
you
of
could,
nowhere.
Out of nowhere, this is indoors.
No, I think Carl was editing at some point and a droplet of water just landed like onto the palm, like top of his hand.
That's wild.
There was a lot of that weird out of nowhere dripping water stuff.
No.
There's a friend of ours who is a screenwriter, and before the doc was ever, like, we hadn't shown anybody, no one knew about Mokash, no one knew about any of that. He saw one of our presentations at a paranormal event, and he came up to us, and he's like, I think this could be a really cool horror script. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, I trust you. You're a friend of ours. Go ahead. You can take a crack at it if you want, but there's some stuff you should know about this. So we told him before anyone else, and I think he misinterpreted what we were trying to tell him.
Uh-huh.
And when we read the first draft of this, Mokash was the bad guy. And I immediately called him up and I went, no, you can't do this, you can't do this.
Right.
We've spent too long making friends with Mokash. And you know what he said? He was like, I was just getting ready to call you because as soon as I sent this off, I had an infestation of water bugs in my house.
Fucking crazy.
In LA.
In
too.
LA.
Yeah, that's
I don't
weird.
Like any
weird.
Of this. No.
So that's why I was like, careful, Mike.
Yeah, no.
Huge fans over here, Mokash.
Just a joke. I was being
that's
ironic.
So great. No, you do get that feeling, like even coming home, you're like, okay, there's rules to thinking about that thing.
You know what it is?
Go ahead.
I really do think that, you know, regardless of whether this was a manifestation of all of the projections people put on it, whether this was something that was already existing there, or whether it was, you know, something else. I really do think that this time and place was a time and place when Mokash is trying to reemerge or make her presence known to a wider audience. And it's very funny to me that no matter how wildly different the projects that we're trying to make are, you know, one of them's about goblins in Kentucky. Yeah. One of them's about a, you know, weird crone in the Catskills. They keep coming back to old gods.
Yeah.
I was
it seems that the old gods
thing.
Are trying yeah, to come back.
I love this.
I mean, some of the stuff that we're doing in the third season of Hellier is even weirder in that aspect, too.
Yeah.
Which is the most anyone knows about Hellier 3, by the way.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my God.
So true.
It we're keeps behind happening. The paywall here. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It keeps happening.
So
I don't,
good.
And I don't know how to explain it other than there are intelligences out there that really want their stories told, mm-hmm. and I don't think they've been told for a while.
It wow. feels cyclical. Yeah. It feels like the timing of the old guard is ready mm-hmm. to come down a little bit, and there's a new emergence, and it has this divine feminine undertone too. And
sure.
I like this reemergence of the gods.
Me too.
This is great.
I also couldn't help but think about just like everything that has now happened in Ukraine since yeah. you guys started making this film, and this idea of this divine feminine old god being unbound from like ancient Ukrainian belief, like before this horrific war starts mm-hmm. happening, you know, it's just like it's
you can't not think about it watching the movie.
You can't obviously. Not make yeah. draw yeah. that connection. Yeah. yeah, just like whoa, that's a strange strange synchronicity, strange. Whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. We could have pointed more attention to that, but it didn't feel like it was exploited.
No, you don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just wanted to let it be.
We're thinking about it.
Yeah. I think people, it's but bad. There are articles, there are news articles out there about how Ukraine has embraced their old gods through this conflict. And one of them is yeah. Mokosh.
That's fucking right.
And that really it powerful. Seems that archetype yeah, is reemerging, not just there, but in other parts of the world, maybe because it's really needed right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's that nuance, right? It gives us, with reintroducing ourselves to these archetypal kind of experiences, we have that nuance, we have the ability to move through life with new ways of looking at things, and I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's well great. Said. Well, we are fans of your yep. guys's. I mean, you guys ever, you know, from Hellier to your Haunted Objects podcast to the Unbinding movie, everything you guys do has this quality of honesty and authenticity that I think that's what people are responding so much to what you guys are doing. You guys are putting it out there in such an incredible, real and honest way.
And I love
mm-hmm.
I love the improvisational approach to the investigation.
Yeah,
like the yes
that's
ending.
That's
yes,
great.
Good. Like keep at it, you know? It's
there's a lot
very
of
interesting
no.
to watch. Well, sure.
Right, right. Yeah, it's supposed to be yes no. and. Yes and.
Maybe that makes
right.
us bad improv artists, but
you guys
there's definitely a lot of like,
researchers.
I don't like this storyline.
Yeah. I can see you guys yeah. teaching like an improv ghost class, like how to speak, how to do yeah. improv with spirits.
I think that's just ghost hunting, my friend.
Yeah, right.
I think right. so. Well, The Unbinding, I think, collectively gets a 10 out of 10 old crones.
Absolutely.
From yeah. the Bigfoot Movie Club. This is everyone check it out. I love Hellier too. I think this is your best work so far. It's really awesome to just see, and it's part of a longer larger conversation as well. So if you're a fan of Greg and Dana's work and you've listened to all of this and you haven't watched the movie, go check it out. It's so
yes,
good. We highly recommend
go
it. Required viewing for BCC, I would say.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's canon.
Yeah,
it's
thanks
canon.
Guys.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. You know where to come when Hellier 3 or whatever next comes out in between is ready.
Of course.
We're going to want to talk about it with you guys. Greg, Dana, Newkirk, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for inspiring us too as creators. Like I walked out
absolutely.
Of the movie, I'm like, all right, boys, what are we gonna go do? This is cool. You know? Like, let's go make some
totally
shit.
Inspiring.
Yes,
yep.
yes. That's
that
awesome.
Level,
fantastic.
Let's make some shit. You know what I mean?
It's yes. just
like in all seriousness, it's so cool as you know, you guys are outside of the Hollywood system. You guys are doing this and running circles around some of us. So
fuck,
congratulations on getting it done and making stuff. You know, that is a huge accomplishment in and of itself. So well done.
Well, you guys
thanks.
Are the best. Thanks for making
means
us feel good.
Means a lot.
Good.
Really does.
Yeah. And when can we go on a hunt with you guys? An investigation?
I want to.
Where
let's
are we
figure
going?
It out.
Yeah,
okay.
Let's do
we'll
it.
Do it. We'll make
we'll
it.
We'll be there.
Seriously. I'm not
right.
kidding.
Absolutely.
No, the
okay.
time's come.
Done.
We'll make
bring
it.
The God helmet.
Yeah.
Bring the God helmet.
Yes.
We'll come to you. We'll come
to
you. You guys got a place
to do it.
We'll come to you.
I have to try the God helmet.
Okay. Yeah.
Done.
We'll get real weird.
Right. You can communicate it dirt and synth and with your synthesizer.
Yeah.
through the god helmet.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my god, guys. Riley's in god mode. What are we going to do?
Well, our grand plan is we just want to make enough money off of the unbinding to buy a float tank for the basement.
Yes.
So Dana can really become a psychic weapon.
I'm working on it. I'm getting like Lawnmower Man visuals.
Yeah. Remember Lawnmower Man? Like in his basement. Like
I'm still a psychic spy in training. Yes. I'm working on it.
Oh, love that.
Let's make this happen, guys, internet.
Donate, watch, whatever you have to do. Let's
whatever
get
it takes.
Sensory deprivation.
Do it.
I need this.
We're on it. All right, thanks everybody. We love you guys. Where there's love, there's kisses.
Mwah. Thank you, Patreon.
And thank you, Greg and Dana.
Thanks.
Oh, awesome. Oh man, we appreciate you guys so much.
Oh man, we appreciate you guys. You guys, this is.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.